use that as your cue.
That would be awesome. All right, here it comes. Welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we are simplifying the good life. My name is Brock Dittus.
That's me, Brandon Rhodes. We are broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
We're covering day-to-day life, food, alcohol, bicycles, and alternative transportation, communications, the internet, all kinds of good stuff. Living local is kind of the big theme today.
Yeah, definitely. And we are here in the room with Mr. Vincent Caldoni of hey. Of what?
Of what? Of Portland.
Of Portland, Oregon. you're a man of many trades, many estimable pursuits, and one of those is film and, yeah. and acting, so yeah. And many other things. So anyways, we're glad to have you here. You Thank and you. Brandon have known each other for a long time.
About 12 years now.
12 yeah. years. Yeah. Oh, my God.
And you met working at the zoo?
He was my very first boss.
Yeah. Oh, you were his boss.
I was his boss at the Oregon Zoo.
Oh, this lends itself to all kinds of interesting questions. Okay. Well, anyways, that's cool.
What kind of insubordinate little shit was Brandon back in the day?
That's really what I wanted to know.
Oh, he really was, too. He just hated the idea that he would have to actually do work for all 8 hours of a shift.
It was rough.
I saw
you smoking in the bushes all the time. But you're the boss. You can do what you want.
It's true. If he's the boss, he gets to smoke in the bushes.
Literally, my job was to make sure you were working.
Yeah.
And if you were, I didn't have anything to do.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
true. Yeah.
And the guy that got me the job was the worst slacker of all. So, yeah, it
was rough. Yeah, he really was. He was.
We once went downtown on the clock.
Really?
Yeah.
You did not clock out.
And got lunch.
Did you go on transit?
Yeah, we took the max to downtown.
Hop into the elevator, down about 250 feet.
Yeah, when we
feet.
Came back out of the elevator, he looked around and was like, oh shit, there he is.
Wait, really? You got back and they're like, hey, there's the guy that's still on the clock.
Yeah. No, well, I
was.
He was working hard.
Yeah, because the way it worked was if he did something like leave the zoo unexpectedly, I had the cover.
Right, right.
And I could, I mean, I maybe... If I was a little feeling bad that day, I might break someone's balls about slacking off on the clock just for principle.
Sure.
But most of the time, I did not care what anybody did as long as I didn't have to do it for them.
Oh, there we go, yeah.
And that was the line. And friggin' Vance, he would still be working there if he wanted to, if he had understood that simple concept.
So it's do your work and then do whatever the hell you want.
Yeah, like if you did, like if they would have done like a big sweep of the zoo and like just done their areas that they had to do and just like cleaned it real good, made it look all nice, emptied out all the trash cans, even if they weren't very full, so that anything that collected wouldn't have piled up, they probably could have made it to downtown and back.
There you go.
And I would have seen them, I would have been like, don't let the boss see you. But I was like running around with sweat pouring down my face going, where have you been?
Because this broom and dustpan has been sitting
We've
here.
We've been at Burger King, that's what.
You go downtown, you go to Burger King?
Shut up.
I mean, when you're 18, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I didn't know better. I was 16.
That's true then. Very true. At 16, you have no idea. You're like, I can go other places. There are other places to go.
You probably could have stayed at the zoo and got a burger for free for about the same quality.
Yeah, they weren't being as generous quite yet.
It sounds like there's a story behind that, but maybe we should cut that one off so that
I think we should actually probably put a full-on moratorium on zoo talk.
That's a great idea.
I think that needs to go away.
We can have an entire episode of animals trying to escape.
That's okay, but
that's not right now.
Right, and certain individuals forming plans for how to release animals into the city.
Yeah,
that sounds like a good sounds like a good story.
Brock, you get to go on your first midnight mystery ride.
Yes, I did. Yeah, I was really excited.
I haven't heard anything about this yet.
Oh, you haven't? Oh, that's right, because you were gone all day yesterday, pretty much. And then, I went on my first midnight mystery ride. It was. I believe, if I'm not mistaken. It's hosted by the Dropout Bike Club, which is kind of the freak bike collective that stepped up to fill the hole that Chunk 666 left when they kind of stopped doing things publicly. Huh. Chunk, do you remember Chunk at all?
No. Okay. But yes.
Maybe not by name, but they were the guys, like, historically here in Portland, who rode freak bikes of all kinds around the town. And they had, you know, they had tall bikes, which was, you know, one frame welded on top of another vertically, long bikes where, you know, they were stretched out like choppers, or any number of other strange things. But anyways, they stopped doing events, and they used to have a big, you know, pallet burning chunkathon thing that they did. It was this big, you know, do it on an empty lot in the Northwest industrial area, back when it was still an industrial area, and yeah. You know, burn pallets, light your bike on fire, go for a beer run, alley cat challenges where you're, like, you know, racing with all of these strange bikes and fire and fireworks and all that. So anyways, that stopped happening. The other collective, the Dropout Bike Club, I think kind of formed in that absence and said, hey, we're going to be less exclusive. We're going to invite people along, and we're going to have a good time riding bikes around. So the Midnight Mystery Ride, basically, it's there's a blog on the internet, and it's WordPress.com. That's a simple one to remember. But they post the day of the ride. You don't know anything about it until then, but they post on the Friday that it's the second Friday of every month where they're going to meet to start this ride. Mm-hmm. And then people show up. So there was probably like 60 to 70 was my estimation.
Holy crud. I was, this whole time I was imagining like two dozen.
Right. Right. It's a huge crowd of people. But a lot of them have...
Who have been drinking.
Yeah. Yeah. So we met at the Red Flag.
Which
is up on like 28th.
Inkening and 28th.
Near Gleason. And it's...
Oh, it's that one.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's kind of in that up and coming district. It's a fantastic bar. It's doubled in size spatially since the last time I was there.
Big
in like
patio.
2008 or something. But I remember they have a great jukebox there. So anyways.
What makes for a good jukebox?
Good.
I guess there's one question. There's one answer to that. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Keep going.
Well, no. The jukebox. The jukebox at the Red Flag is fantastic because they have both.
Selection. You can pay it in cigarette butts.
That's right. They have a selection of classic music, and they have newer records that have kind of made their way onto the scene. So not necessarily the stuff that's the most popular or the top 40, but certainly like the classic rock that you want to hear when you're at a bar. And then, you know, like Blitz and Trapper, for example, or Caliphone. They got full albums by them also stuck into this jukebox. So, yeah. But like I say, I haven't actually been inside. I did not go inside this time because I showed up on my tall bike, which travels about half the speed of my usual bike because it's geared low. So,
right.
Anyways, we were there for about 10 minutes. My friend Aaron, who is guest hosted on the podcast before, and a friend of his showed up, so I knew two people at the ride of 70 folks. But we all hopped on bikes and started riding around town, and we kind of wound through the southeast area of town down towards the river. Ended up going.
Are people
over
lively?
People are lively. People are making noise. People are shouting. Everybody's excited. People are getting to know each other. From my perch atop my tall bike, I was able to speak to the people below.
Flee for your lives.
Exactly. One does not simply bike into Mordor. So,
you were Andre the Giant in the Princess Bride.
Anybody want a peanut? Yeah, so I think at a strategic place above everyone, so I could kind of hear lots of conversations happening around me, and I was able to just kind of chime in to whichever one sounded the most interesting at the time. So we crossed the Hawthorne Bridge, went downtown to the there's that fountain down by, I can't remember where it is. Is that Skidmore Fountain? Is that the one that has the big jets right on the waterfront?
That's the Salmon Street Springs.
That's the Salmon Street. Okay. Yeah, there we go. So we circled around that, which was kind of fun because you got like 70 people in a group all riding around the thing at once.
Fully ensconced it.
Yeah, definitely. Then we continued on down, made a turn. We went to a place, and I'm thinking, actually, now, just because this is something that goes out to the public.
Wait, which bridge did you go over?
The Hawthorne Bridge.
Was it freaky being on a tall bike going over the bridge?
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking about what would happen if I was to tumble. And I didn't like the prospect, so I stopped thinking about it.
Yeah, keep going.
Yeah, yeah, scary stuff. So
it's probably the only circumstance where you'd prefer to land in the river.
I suppose you're right, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's pretty much guaranteed. If you go over into traffic, it's pretty much
definitely your fate has been sealed.
Yeah, you could probably pull it out from the Hawthorne Bridge, from the deck of the Hawthorne.
Yeah, probably so.
Probably land that. There's a lady that went over a few years ago. Took in her SUV, went all
serious?
The way off the Morrison Bridge. Morrison.
Oh, the Morrison.
All the way down in the water and got out.
My goodness.
And pulled her out of the river swimming around.
I think I remember hearing that story. And the Morrison is the one that comes off of the I-5 freeway. So, or you can leave the I-5 freeway.
The city center exit from I-5. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So was she doing that? Do you think she was like leaving the freeway and just jetted across the bridge? Or?
She was from Washington. I don't know. She was some Vancouverite.
Who that explains it.
Coming through Portland in the middle of the day. It wasn't rush hour or anything. And it had been raining. And that's a great. So it got slick and she went over. The funny thing about it was I was walking to school. So I was walking over the bridge.
Oh, really?
In the driving rain.
And you were there when it happened?
No, I was there just after it happened.
Oh, okay.
And so the all the ODOT guys and the paramedics are sitting around yucking about it. Like, there's this giant hole.
Did you see that? That was crazy.
Look at this picture.
And I walk up and I said, well, what happened? And they said, well, we really can't tell you. And I was like, well, but I mean, come on. What? And they're like,
no,
well,
big secret, right?
Somebody might have drove their SUV off the edge.
Right.
And I was like, oh, my God, is she okay? Like, we can't tell you. She's fine.
Can't release any of the details. She's all right.
She lived? Yeah. Yeah, they just got the truck out.
That's pretty crazy. They take it out with a crane or something? Or how do you rescue a truck from the river?
They had footage of it on the news, and probably somebody remembers.
Trained
this.
River otters that put a hitch on it.
if I remember, it never sunk.
Oh, okay.
And so they actually towed it to the side of the barge and then tow trucked it out of the... And I think because a Morrison would be right there by the, you know, by the Esplanade.
Uh-huh.
So I think they actually tow trucked it out of there. So,
wow.
But I didn't see any of this, so I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's an exciting story, though. That's good times. I mean,
is it
for you and the ODOT guys.
Good times. I
want to drop the volume on that one.
It's true. Yeah.
The whole point of the story is that if she could go over in a car off the Morrison, you could very easily bike off the Hawthorne.
It's true.
To tell.
Or bike into the railing of the Hawthorne and then proceed without the bike thereafter.
Yeah.
I suppose.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
They just walk by and someone's coming
sell
down.
Sell my
the
bike to charity!
Just find a tall bike leaned against the water.
Exactly.
Leaning against the rail. Some guy down in the water.
Help! So the Midnight Mystery Ride, it concludes at a secret location. That's why it's a mystery ride. So the whole time you're riding, you don't know where you're going to be turning next, where you're riding to. No one releases any details. And I won't release the details of where we were that night publicly. I can tell you later if you want off of the microphone, but we ended up in a great place with a rock that was near some water that you could build a fire at. And so they built a bonfire and, you know, everybody hung out. There was some substances consumed of many kinds. And yeah, people had a good time. And that's not to project that it wasn't a raging drug fest or anything. It wasn't a rave. There's no thumping music.
How far
know.
Was the rock?
It wasn't like the Wicker Man on the beach.
Not quite. But everybody was having a great time. There were a few things. A few laws were technically violated, like, you know, open containering and that sort of thing. But but I mean, come on. It's not the first
this
time it's happened.
If you can have buttons, you need to get... how to get burned! How to get burned!
Not the bees!
Oh, okay. Yeah. Although I predict if Nicolas Cage had been riding with us, he would have in fact lost his shit. So it was a good time. Anyways, it's
how far was the ride? How far do they take you?
I would say no more than 5 miles. You know, it was a circuitous route. We made many turns that we didn't need to take. Like we didn't go straight there. We just kind of, you know,
lollygagged.
We did. Yeah, all through the coolest parts of town just to see different things. We went right past Scott Prose's apartment.
Oh, nice.
I thought of him as we passed. And so anyways, I highly recommend it. Going on a midnight mystery ride is a chance to meet people. If you enjoy meeting strangers and kind of schmoozing and having good conversations, that's good.
Sounds like fun.
But at the time that I was leaving, I think someone was collecting money to try and convince someone to jump nude into the river. And
that sounds horrible.
They never quite raised enough money to convince anyone at that time of day, temperature, and situation to actually jump in. So.
I got my buddy Alex to jump off the, it's not the Esplanade, it's the waterfront, you know, wall.
Uh-huh.
$5.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and dude went and did it.
Wow.
That was back in the day when you could, there was a, right by the Burnside Bridge, there was a dock down on the water.
Uh-huh.
And so he jumped off the Esplanade and swam over to the dock and came up.
Oh, that's nice. Oh,
okay. I was going to ask how he got out, because that's a large wall on the west bank, you said?
West Bank.
Mm-hmm. There's a big wall, a bunch of ships there. The Navy docks there every year for the Rose Festival.
Yeah, it's right where the ships park.
Yeah,
he had to swim about, I don't want to exaggerate, say 80 to 100 feet upstream. I think he underestimated how hard that would be because he was looking pretty haggard by the time he got to that little platform.
Right.
But he got his $15.
15, you got $5.
Five? Oh, shit.
I'll give you five if you jump off this thing. And there were no drugs involved. He just thought it was a good idea.
There you go.
I have to think he wanted to do it.
Those are the best kinds of people. Just people that will do things unprovoked. Right. I mean, I suppose provoked by money, but you know, nothing else.
Yeah. I had a guy.
Like Snooki.
It's a zoo story. I had a guy one time.
I don't know what even that means.
Not like Snooki. No, not at all.
He had a cup with him, a cup of soda, and you know, you got behind a restaurant where you dump all the fragrances.
Uh-huh.
And he said, "What would you give me if I took this cup and I dipped it in there and I just drank like, you know, like 12 ounces of fire grease?" Bloop, bloop, bloop. Yeah, and I was like, "Yeah, I give you $5." He starts to go for it. I'm like, "Oh, Justin, don't do it." And he was so determined because he said he was broke that I actually gave him $5 to not do it.
Wait, did you double then? It was like double for nothing, basically.
It was single for nothing. Yeah, I gave him $5 to not drink.
Gotcha. So it started out as a deal like, "I'll give you $5 if you drink this." And then you said, wait, "I'll give you $5 to not drink this."
Yeah, because I was calling his bluff, but the last thing I want to see is the guy drink rancid fire grease and rat shit.
Right.
That was not.
And he's not a diesel engine. Even if he was, he would need a heater to kind of warm it up before he could actually burn the fuel. So.
And he'd have to convert all his intestines to rubber casing. So, yeah.
It's true.
We've got some headlines, eh?
Yeah, that we do. And I suppose it's time to read them.
Indeed.
Shall I?
Please.
Yeah, here we go.
I can't do both on the same machine.
This is local Portland band Hurt Bird, who we're big fans of. They're very obliging with their music.
What can compare with the thrill of a brand new bike?
All right, first up from Path Less Pedaled, our friends Russ and Laura post the complete Kiwi Chronicles.
Yeah, and
they're
touring
video series.
Yeah, they just returned from New Zealand. They've been down there for quite some time now. It was a long trip, and when they went this time, they're
Milford Sound. Oh my god.
Oh yeah, and you've seen some of these places before because
I didn't
there.
Get to Milford.
Okay,
but yeah,
you saw this on the screen and said, "Oh, I'd like to go there."
Yes.
Oh, so so you didn't make it to what Milford Sound? You said,
yeah.
It's a fantastic picture here. The fully loaded Brompton folding bicycles, and then them sitting on the end of the pier or the dock there. And
is that the ocean?
Is it the ocean, Brandon?
No, well, it's the ocean starting to come into it. It's at the very southern, basically, end of Aotearoa.
Okay. Yeah. So it's salt water anyways. And the
southern... it's sort of like the Columbia. I think it's...
Yeah, it looks like the gorge a lot.
Yeah, it actually does. It's kind of funny. You go one place and you're like, "Hey, this looks exactly like..."
Well, you know, my crazy rant, I've given this to Brandon, there's probably no two more similar places in the world than Portland, Oregon and Christchurch, New Zealand, right? They sit on the same parallel on the other ends of the globe.
They both have huge wooden churches.
Wellington is culturally a lot more like it.
Oh, really?
But Christchurch is closer to the parallel, but man.
Yeah. And, you know, they both have this, like, vast wilderness around them that's, a major draw. They have their port cities. They have a high-tech industry, similar racial and religious and ethnic makeups. It's crazy. They were founded within 10 years of each other.
Oh, really?
Hmm. Yeah.
That's awesome.
And so you hear people, they're always like, "I want to go to New Zealand." Like, it's like this exotic place. But actually, if you're used to Portland,
it's really similar.
At least statistically, at least on paper, anyway. I've never been to New Zealand, so I'm not going to say.
Right.
No, Wellington is so much like Portland.
Really?
It was awesome. Yeah, it was awesome.
I'd love to.
But yeah, they got their whole... video series up, huh?
Yeah, definitely. And this is a partnership with Bicycle Times, which is a pretty fantastic magazine. Our friend David Hetty lent me a Bicycle Times one, an issue of that one time, and I read it and devoured it, consumed it. They have a big focus on either touring bicycles or bicycles that are functional, as opposed to like the racing thing, like bicycle.
They aren't about ounce counting.
They're not about. No, they do not cut their toothbrushes in half.
Good.
At least not for that reason. But the
they do it to get laid.
I suppose so. Look how small my toothbrush is. That's a real sell point, I think. But anyways, they were partnered with Bicycle Times and Adventure Cycling, which is a fantastic. I actually just got my Adventure Cycling maps. They're in a stack right there for our upcoming tour this summer when Adele and I leave town. They did this video series, which is basically, you know, some video that they captured what they did, and it's kind of like following along on their tour. Obviously, you can't capture every aspect of...
I'm looking forward to checking it out.
Yeah, but they're all available, and I believe they're all Vimeoed and YouTubed, so you can get them in whatever format you want. No matter which kind of mobile device you have.
HTML5 or Flash.
Right, a possibly animated GIF. So anyways, that's it.
JPEG Motion A.
That's that. So good times.
Next up. Give me my noise.
Cancel. Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
That's a lot of work for that.
That sure was. Portland Afoot has a story about... there are at least three good things about Portland, about TriMet's proposed cuts. I read the story.
Yeah, it's a fantastic, fantastic little deal. And I mean, in the midst of budget cuts, it's a lot of bad news, and you kind of expect it to be the worst thing that you've heard, you know, and news to continue getting worse.
Let me just throw this at you, Caldoni, here. So,
yes.
What's one of the biggest weaknesses in TriMet's current setup?
TriMet's current setup?
Yeah.
The biggest weakness I can think of in TriMet's current setup, the single biggest, is that we specifically built our city along east-west corridors. We go into downtown and we go out of downtown. We do not go north and south. It is so hard
fucking
to travel
A.
north and south.
It's true. It's true.
And this is one of his points.
Really?
Is that, they would actually finally have one that would be not the 6 and not like you have to get up to Cesar Chavez. But like it would be running along 15th or something like that. Yeah,
really?
They're going to merge a couple of lines.
So this is a span of about about 40 blocks or so that that is not served north south by transit at all. So.
And it's the most populous and vibrant and lively parts of town.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be great. I mean, you know, one of the first things they do when TriMet was facing budget cuts is they cut the. 71, which went along like it was like 102nd, and it kind of weaved in and out sort of by corresponding loosely with 205, and then they cut it all together. It doesn't exist anymore, and then they really relax service on. I forget what it is, but the bus goes down 122nd.
Oh yeah, that's now the 71, I believe.
They cut that was something else, and then they cut service on the 71, meaning that in my neighborhood north south travel doesn't exist anymore.
Oh wow!
I mean, functionally,
is that something on like 122nd or
the 71 runs once an hour on weekdays? I don't know if it runs on. I think it runs on Saturdays, but I don't know when. Hmm. And it doesn't run on Sundays, I don't believe.
That's interesting. I thought that it was more more frequent than that. But, I mean, it has been cut several times in the past couple of years as well. So
yeah, I correct me if I'm wrong, it's to the point where when you go on Transit Tracker, it no matter where you're going, it hasn't told me since they made the cuts to ride the 71 anywhere.
Oh, right. Like you're going to catch one of those east-west connectors to get to where you need to be.
It tends to be faster to go downtown or to go to 82nd and then go back out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. I suppose the place where we live on the 19 line, and there are certain places, like if I'm going to go to the Doug Fir for a concert and I don't want to ride my bike, I want to take the bus so my seat doesn't get stolen like it did last time. If we ride, I think, down from there, the easiest way is to go through downtown and just like ride the line until it starts curving out.
That's how I used to get to work. I could either transfer once and get there in 50 minutes, or I could get to 20th and Burnside in... 55.
Oh, are you serious? And then you don't have to stand outside.
And I got to see downtown,
right.
Which is wonderful every time. And I get to go over the bridges.
That's where all the sexy people hang out.
That's pushing it.
Depends on your definition of sexy.
Yeah, no kidding.
Probably not true.
But we've got a weird transit system. And some of these cuts, I really appreciate Michael's saying, hey, it ain't all shit.
Right.
Yeah, I'd like to read that. It's been an apocalypse on my
end. They haven't even done anything yet.
Yeah.
Well, what they've done so far has gone as much as to threaten my job security out where I live.
Really? It's that much harder for you to get to job work?
So much harder for me to get to work. I mean, when I started living out here, to get into downtown to work was a 40-minute proposition. To get not to downtown, but out to the zoo, I really do got to leave an hour and 45 minutes.
Right. I was going to say, unless you're going to leave like 3 hours before you have to be at work and end up wasting a bunch of time. I mean, it's not a waste if you're getting to work and being employed, but it's really inconvenient.
Yeah. So maybe number four on their list should be that it's by screwing TriMet up, bicycle transit is becoming ever more competitive.
Yeah, and there was an article about that. I think it might have been a Bike Portland article. I didn't pull that one up for this
week.
We're
all scraping for ways to call this glass half full, man.
We really are, yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, how's that wine treating you?
Oh, yeah, we should say this is one of the this is like our second episode where we aren't drinking beer or whiskey.
Right.
We are having a, you can pronounce those better than I can, Caldoni.
it's a Clos Berenguer del Molar. And I don't really know what that even means.
I was going to say, it's a lot of syllables. I don't think those are words that I don't understand.
But it's a red wine. It's a table wine.
But it's classy, damn it.
Well, it's Priorat, which is not the same thing as a table wine. It's a lot more alcoholic.
Hmm. 14, yeah, 14 and a half.
14 and a half. That's actually very alcoholic.
That's not. That's not quite table wine.
Yeah, that's like trending port.
So it's a Grenache and a Cabernet.
But listing to port.
Yeah. It's a Carignan and Syrah. So it's a blend which makes it table, and it's a Grenache and Cabernet oriented blend, which is going to be really common for a table wine. But I don't know what Carignan is, and it's the era we live in. So of course we just put Syrah on everything.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, it sounds French. That's
right. Yeah.
Oh, that sounds nice.
Yeah. At least it's not Shiraz.
A couple of the things in this story about the upsides to transit cuts was the rearranging of Northwest Portland's tangled up grid.
Yeah. And,
I think you've spent some time down there. You know kind of how the buses zig and zag about in those neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't look like they're completely straightened out. But for example, the 77 is the one I think that he gives as an example in this article.
Sure, yeah.
The 77 in particular has a complicated route that makes several unnecessary turns, duplicates the streetcar on Northrop and Lovejoy streets, oddly runs one way on Everett Gleason, on 23rd and 25th, even though 23rd is a two-way street. By moving the 77 to run on 21st and Everett Gleason, Northwest Portland will finally have a clear grid structure that anyone can intuitively understand. So like if you look down the street and you're like, I want to go there. Mm-hmm. You get on a bus and it takes you there, as opposed to getting on
Which
a bus.
Is what public transit is supposed to do?
Well, it's what Northwest Portland is supposed to do. I mean, that was the whole idea behind the Alphabet District. Was that they were going to start building functional grids, which were not ubiquitous in Portland at that time.
Right. Yeah, it was one of the newer developments that actually didn't twist and turn and everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's funny, man. The idea that you would get on a transit system and it would just like zig and zag you out to Timbuktu.
Right. Well, when you're in a grid, when there's no reason why it needs to take crazy turns. Right. Like that.
Well, I bet there were also earlier on some echoing of the old trolley lines, which did zig and zag because they were tied in as private developments with different, like Irvington was tied a little bit. The Sunnyside neighborhood there's a plaque that says like, this was the end of the line, and it was really kick-ass, and this whole neighborhood came out of it. Mm-hmm. And so I imagine that they, like, there's still some legacy of that built into our system now, like these ziggers.
That makes sense, yeah. And I should say, maybe as a disclaimer now, like, this conversation will continue to get more and more Portland-centric as we talk. So, if you're not familiar with
all
Portland,
of our friends in New Belgium, thank you for bearing with us.
Right. If you're not familiar with Portland and you're interested in being, you should probably get an atlas or Google Maps or something open in front of you so you can kind of follow along as we talk about all these different neighborhoods. If you're not interested in that, you know, tune in on the next show. We'll talk about bikes again. So. I just wanted to make sure
we just watch Portlandia. That's about all you need to
That's
know.
True. Yeah, it's very accurate.
It's like being here.
It's a spot on portrayal of how life is here.
Yeah, I felt
just
Pacal.
Like Fred and Carrie the last time I had to clean out a drain.
You got it.
Oh, yeah. Excuse me. It's
you all right there?
Dangerous. Yeah. So the last one is it's a West Side development that I'm actually not super familiar with. There's just several bus lines that are combining into one big bus line. So that's also good news for those who live on the West Side.
Sweet. And well, it's direction. A good way, like cutting as a way to let you reevaluate and condense. And it's like, in the name of cheap cutting corners, we're going to also make this less stupid.
Yeah, right.
We had no other choice.
You have to ask about your priorities.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's an opportunity to do things that you couldn't have done necessarily. Anyway, with the barbarians at your door.
The barbarian horde.
Yeah.
Otherwise known as Clackamas.
All right, in our final story.
Clackamas?
Clackamas, man, yeah. Okay, it's mostly meth there, but...
Don't do clack, kids.
my clack pipe.
We love everyone at Clackamas. dearly.
Finally, Amtrak is quietly serving Oregon City commuters on their trip into Portland. That's very sweet of them.
Yeah. And did we talk about this outside
of this?
Is it by the
municipal elevator?
Well, I suppose you could use that in Oregon City if you wanted to, although it's a long ways away from the
flexing
train station.
My know-how.
That is true. The elevator in Oregon City is, the only municipal elevator in the United States that is publicly funded?
I believe there's two.
Oh, okay, there's one more. But it's very unique in that regard.
I think there's three worldwide.
Right.
What's cool about that thing is, and I don't know, I'm a reasonably expert person on Portland. The thing I do know about that is that thing was engineered and built by local workers.
Is that right?
Yeah, there's no like national design firm. So you take our bridges in Portland, maybe you could say they're roughly similar. They were all built by design firms, whether local or from abroad, people with degrees and stuff. It was factory workers and local engineers and architects who put that thing together and built it on, I think, mostly volunteer money.
Which is pretty cool.
And it's the third edition of it.
Yeah, they've had to go
There were two other ones prior to that, and so that is what we came up with on our third try. And to be fair, there are holograms in it.
That's fun.
But we haven't even gotten to the story yet.
Right. Well,
I'm proud. I'm going to call that our Oregon architecture achievement. Who needs a world fair? We got a fucking
seriously
municipal elevator.
Yeah.
We have a world fair.
Really?
What did we do that? No, I take it back. You're right. We had the Lewis and Clark Exposition.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's kind of like a World's Fair.
We got hula hoops coming out of the ground for it.
Oh, that's fun.
What?
The things in the, but the end of the trail thing.
Oh, the end of the Oregon Trail.
Yeah.
That's different than Lewis and Clark, I think, but it's also big hoops coming up out of the ground.
The Lewis and Clark Expedition happened in the, I want to say the 20s, and they had a big spot for it in Northwest, and they basically took an undeveloped plot of land and they put up like what you would think of in the classical World's Fair exposition, like if you read Devil in the White City, at these different pavilions, and they built a number of things, but they built what was the world's largest all log structure.
That's so awesome.
That's cool.
Yeah, well, and it stood there, and it was to be demolished to make room for the expansion of Highway 30.
Oh, okay.
And
this is like up on Yeon or something, like,
yeah,
it's really
way out there in Northwest. They were, so Hammond and Hanover went out to tear it down, and then it miraculously burnt down on its own, thank God. So everything was fixed. But if you go to the McMinimums in St. John's, that was built as part of the Lewis and Clark Exposition.
Oh, interesting.
And they shipped it across the river on a barge and put it up there, and it operated as a church for a while. Now it's a McMinimums.
That's pretty cool. That's one of two places in the St. John's neighborhood of Portland, Oregon, to see a cheap movie any night of the week.
Yep, they got the Twin, too. It's a great theater.
Twin Cinema, when I went there last, it was like $3. It's probably $4 now, I'm guessing. But McMinniman's probably $3-$4, somewhere in there. They're cheap movies.
Yep.
Yeah.
Last time I was there, Danny Glover was having a beer.
Is that right?
Yeah. One of our few little celebrities that live here.
That's kind of cool. You kind of stumble across him, and he's like the real Danny Glover.
Yeah.
And he's too old for that shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
I told him to cut the green wire.
So this story, maybe I should make the thing again just to kind of get back into this. Amtrak is gaining popularity among commuters who ride between Portland, Oregon City, and Salem. It's been so long since we started the story. The story here in the Oregonian is talking about people who opt, instead of taking TriMet, if they don't want to drive their car to downtown Portland, if they live in Oregon City.
So Oregon City as the what's a native bird that we have?
The peregrine.
As the crow flies.
Okay.
The osprey flies.
As the heron flies.
Oh, there we go. Yeah.
Is what, maybe 16 miles?
Mm-hmm. Something like that.
12 miles maybe from downtown Portland. So,
right.
And it's through this like netherland of Oaks Grove and Milwaukee and all that. So just for those beyond it. But it was where we were originally going to have Portland, our metropolis be.
That's right. It was the original state capital or county seat. It was one of the oldest towns in Oregon.
It was also the first incorporated.
It was also the site of the first hydroelectric dam.
Is that right?
Well, the whole idea of it was they set it up there for ferrying around the only waterfalls that's on the Willamette River.
Okay.
And they were like, well, we can just make money charging people. It's like, except you can't get seafaring ships that far up the Willamette conveniently, and it's all lumpy as shit around there.
Well, there's
a variety of reasons.
It goes a layer deeper than that. Do you know much about John McLaughlin?
Can we get back to this? I just want to make sure we talk about it.
I want to finish my fucking story, man.
I just want to make sure we get back to Amtrak.
I want to talk about the Pig War.
And we will. We will.
What a tease.
Is this the Pig War of the San Juan Islands?
No, it's the Pig War of the Columbia River.
Oh, okay. It's far more local than that. There was a Pig War in the San Juan Islands as well.
It's probably very similar. Actually. Okay, it's probably actually related to that. It's probably the same thing.
The history show, folks. Okay, so Amtrak running from Oregon City, as it does every day. There's several trains on the Cascades Line. They run between Vancouver, BC, and Eugene, Oregon, at their most extreme termini. Each terminus, and between Seattle and Salem, Termites. I think, or at least Seattle and Portland, there are more trips per day. But a lot of people got wise to the fact that if you ride the train from Oregon City to Portland and then back again, it's cheaper than riding TriMet from the same places.
Are you kidding?
Cheaper, faster. You can have a beer. You get free Wi-Fi. And you know
it's comfortable.
It's comfortable. Yeah, and nice. Generally you don't find if there are elements of public transit that you do not enjoy, that are related to issues of class and income, those are things that you can avoid by riding the train. So it's a totally different scenario. But I was amazed, doing the math. If you buy a book of 10 tickets, which is 5 trips downtown and 5 trips away from downtown every week, that is $21, I think.
Yeah,
a week.
$21 a week. Yeah, yep. So for 10 tickets, 21. The same number of trips on TriMet, buying the fares, would be $24. So you're only saving $3, but you're also it's a substantial difference in the amount of time spent.
Wait, you.
It might be faster too,
and definitely
it will
definitely
be faster.
Yeah,
like half the time.
Well, there are no stops, I think, between Oregon City and Portland. Those
correct.
Are, yeah, no. So it's a direct line. So, anyways, it was amazing, and this
I'm
is
moving
such...
to Oregon City and getting a job in downtown just for the sake of that.
It does
kind of
sound nice, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, Oregon City
living
is
small
a,
town, working big town.
Right. The Oregon City is a fun place to walk around, especially the downtown. Up on the hill, it gets sprawly, but the downtown area is great. Mm-hmm. There's a fine Chinese restaurant I ate there on a
and a municipal
and a municipal elevator, and apparently Isengard, like the dam looks a lot like Isengard.
Oh, it reminds me of Isengard
from the Lord of the Rings.
I may or may not occasionally cue the Isengard music on my iPod when I pass by there on the train because it's just such a depressing. Well, it's like this this god awful industrial shithole
right in the middle of a very beautiful
the
place.
River. And then it goes past the little downtown.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's a weird space.
Well, it's also pretty amazing if you think about it in terms of livability. And that if you're right in the main drag of downtown, and you start to get, well, really anywhere in downtown, depending on the day, but particularly as you start to get toward the end of it, there's all that noise from the factory. I mean, and it's present. You can hear it mm-hmm. from the factory complex and the smell from the sewage treatment plant. On a warm day,
right?
When they are wearing or whatever it is, where they bubble the sewage through. Oh,
really?
That's a fun process.
Oh yeah, you've never been in Oregon City on an August day and just been knocked down by the smell of shit.
No, I've only biked through there in like April.
Maybe it's better in April. I've been there the last two times I've been to Oregon City.
Yeah,
I've been like
my grandma always said, shit smellier in August. So.
There's also a lot of mosquitoes. Last time I hung out in Oregon City, we went up on that bluff to kind of do some sightseeing mm-hmm. because there's the hill and you can see a lot of stuff from it. Mm-hmm. And we sat down just to kind of enjoy the view, and we were suddenly swarmed by mosquitoes. And so I imagine that must have something to do with
you'd have to think.
The circulation of sewage.
Ugh. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So, anyways, but that's Amtrak, and it's pretty great. So
it's actually really cool.
So it is. just for you. The last thing announcement, but I have not yet gotten to it. The Humanity on Wheels event is going to be an exciting thing. So let me pull this up and preface this real quick. Humanity on Wheels is an effort of. Let's see here. Kick-Ass Oregon History, which does a bunch of, I believe they have a podcast, which I haven't listened to yet, but I want to check it out because they talk about a lot of the stuff that we're talking about tonight, probably. Just kind of where Portland's been, what's happened here in the past. And it's a combination of that. Partnering with TriMet Diaries, who hosts a lot of Dr. Jeff's essays, along with other folks that write about transit, TriMet Diaries Twitter feed is pretty great because they retweet a bunch of things that people say about TriMet. So if you don't want to sift through all the
tweets
yourself,
they listen to that hashtag. Huh?
Yeah, they pay close attention to the rails. So, and the buses and everything else.
They've got their ear to the ground.
Yeah, but the event, let me see if I can remember when and where. This is happening on Tuesday, March 20th. So it's next Tuesday, actually. By the time you hear this podcast, it'll probably be about a week away. But it's happening downtown at the Jack London Bar, which is under the Rialto Pool Room at 529 Southwest 4th Avenue. I believe it is free.
And what happens?
So it's going to be a storytelling event where they've got a guy talking about, let's see here, a guy talking about the history of TriMet, talking about how the organization has been put together, you know, what it came from, what it is now, all that stuff, and kind of how it got there. There's also a guy, Bill Reagan, who shares his findings as a devoted urban explorer and chronicler. Dr. Jeff is going to be talking, swooning the audience with tales of TriMet adventures. And then other special guests, which are not yet named, and an open mic where you can share your mass transit stories, both angelic and satanic in nature. So
that sounds fun.
Yeah, definitely.
When is this? Next Tuesday?
This is a week.
The 20th.
It's March 20th at the Jack London Bar, which is under the Rialto Pool Room at 529 Southwest 4th Avenue in Portland, Oregon. So I highly recommend it, and I think it's going to be awesome. I will be there, and of course, if you are there,
I'm going to try to get there too.
Yeah, definitely. If you are there, say hello, please. I'll be the guy with the dumb hair.
You'll and the be the guy voice. In the back on a tall bike. And the dumb hair.
You're right. And I will, and the patchy beard. But I'll bring a big stack of stickers. And if you want a Sprocket Podcast sticker, I will be happy to hand one to you. So anyways, that's happening. And with that, we can close out our...
You're taking a lot of responsibility in owning and riding a bicycle. You are now an operator of a wheeled vehicle.
There we go. So with that, we've got some...
You've got mail.
Oh, God. I really don't like that thing.
Oh, really? Should I change it?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, I have the barbershop version too, right?
You should get the... you know, I got a kid, a young boy, and... He's really into Blues Clothes. You should get the mail time.
Oh, do they have a sound for that?
Yeah, like there's a mailbox. There's like a flaming homosexual mailbox on the show. And
is that right?
Yeah, and whenever he comes on, he goes,
he's
mail time. Yeah, oh no.
That's pretty hilarious. No, seriously, Brandon, have you heard this one? Yeah.
You've got some mail.
We got that one too.
I'm so thankful.
We'll figure something out.
Your encyclical knowledge.
Amazing how you could do so much to a sound and not actually improve it.
It's true.
I can stretch it this way. Well, we've got some mail, like we've been talking about. Listener Dan from Leech Lake Reservation in Minnesota, writes in. He's now listened to every episode. Wow, I haven't even listened to every episode. And shaves his scant beard with an old-fashioned, really? An old-fashioned razor.
Yeah, just like Amos. And actually, as I was dialoguing with him on the internet... he said that he hadn't actually heard the bonus audio that we recorded of Amos telling about how he meticulously shaves with an old fashioned razor.
I'm really ready to move towards that.
Yeah, that's pretty great.
I mean, not that I shave that often.
Well, you have a full beard, yeah. Just maintenance and trimming.
Yeah, indeed. He says of the cold in his state, quote, "It does get cold. People say you do not have bad rides, but bad gear." It's a good aphorism. In other words, dress warm and you're fine. Unquote.
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit of the bicycling statement that people make, saying like, you know, it's always a good day to ride.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just have a different tone,
a different perspective. Yeah.
Yeah.
And be prepared. So yeah.
I'm. What is it you guys used to say on your bike ride through when you went last summer?
Best day ever. I am a fucking motherfucker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that will get you past any hill.
That's right. it's a mantra.
You can start a yoga class. I am a fucking motherfucker yoga with Brock Dennis.
That's
tall guy with a patchy beard.
That's right.
Patrick and David. This is the longest it's taken to get through the mailbag even.
Go for it, man.
Patrick in Davis, California says, "Hi, guys. Attending the North American Handmade Bike Show and today in Sacto. The PDX contingent is very large." That's right. My personal favorites are the Metro Fit Fights.
Metro Feats. Metro something Feats, like that.
F-I-E-T-S. Crew. Renova Wood Bikes. Yeah, they are beautiful. Seriously considering a Metro Fights bike over a car purchase, especially with the gas prices, what they currently are. And it's only supposed to get higher, by the way.
That's right.
Back to them. Wish Bike Friday was here to counterbalance the Bromptons. Have a good show.
Yeah. I'm not sure what Patrick has against Bromptons. But maybe it's just balance. Maybe it's not
Say more about Bike Friday.
Bike Friday, they're another folding bike company. I believe they only fold in half. Bromptons have a three-fold process, and Bike Friday and most other folding bikes only fold in half. They do compress, and you can take them. You know, it's the same benefits of a folding bike that you could get from anything else. You make it smaller, and then you can take it onto a bus or somewhere else with you.
Just so you know, a Brompton fits so small that you can fit it in the overhead compartment on an airliner.
That's right.
So you can just run it through the X-ray machine,
right,
and skip the $50 fee.
And oftentimes you can
assuming that's all you're taking.
True.
You don't have a helmet or anything.
But you can tell people that it's not, or you don't have to tell them it's not a bike. You don't have to claim that it's a bicycle. You can call it exercise equipment because you know it's not shaped like a bike. And bikes always get an extra surcharge when you take them on any form of transit, basically.
Why?
Except for
because they can.
Because people hate bikes and they want to make money, I think.
How is a bike different from anything else you're bringing on the airplane?
It's a good question. Yeah, especially if it compacts to an overhead.
Well, it might roll around, but they're so gracious in how they fly. It's not like everything's like. Ooh. Yeah,
I think you're right. I think it's just another way to kind of stick it to you and get a little bit more cash. So, anyways, that's our mail. You can send us an email at thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. And we'd love to hear from you. There's also a donate button. If you like what you're hearing, you can click that and donate some money for us to buy beers. This is the end of our regular segments, and now we can speak to
we can finally get to our guest.
Speak to Vincent. Yes.
Am I destroying your podcast?
No, you're doing fine.
I did bring up the pig war.
Maybe we should start with the pig war. Do you want to just unspool that succinctly?
Yeah, I'll do it as quickly as I can. My understanding of why Oregon City
make things up.
My understanding of why Oregon City is where Oregon City is that John McLaughlin was a member of the Hudson Bay Company, who was a advanced member of the whatever Fort Vancouver was.
And John McLaughlin was like the founder of Oregon City.
Yeah, he was. Yes. There was something going on down there, and the idea was that the Willamette Valley was very rich in resources, and to ship that out to sea, you had to go through the Willamette River. Mm-hmm. So what that meant was that the Oregon City people had a sort of a camp set up to move goods around this waterfall system, and he moved from there, defected to the United States, and moved down to Oregon City with the idea of making it the sort of competition to Vancouver. And I've heard, I guess I don't really know, my understanding is that part of why Portland was not the choice was that it didn't have people not building vessels that couldn't get that far down. So the depth of the ports in Portland was less important. And then on top of that, he wanted to have some space between him and the British because there was real suspicion that the Columbia
River... What did the pigs come into the story?
My understanding is that somebody somewhere in Washington State killed a pig, and then it became a fight over jurisdiction between the United States and...
Who gets the bacon?
Who gets to try the guy. what international law?
Which laws did he offend?
Because it was a bit of a no man's land.
It was
no pigs.
It was
for old pigs.
It was not fully understood where the border was, where Britain began and America ended, and Britain was asserting at that time that it was the Columbia River, and so that was the big war. It was a time of because at that time there were British in Washington State, but they were not really the power. And so a lot of these settlers wanted to see the American government take over and bring the U.S. military in and have that kind of protection from natives, law, all
and
of
such.
Things into shape.
Yeah, make it look more like the rest of the West at that point.
More like Brooklyn? Because that's still happening.
Yeah, that's still happening. So anyway, yeah, that's the big war.
Yeah, there we go. And I just found the... There we go.
Thank you, Brock.
Thank God.
So, So, Brandon, you had some questions for Caledonia that you kind of wanted to kickstart the conversation.
Yeah. I mean, like, so one of the reasons I brought you on is we just jive well in conversation and can talk for hours. We've stayed up all night, I believe multiple times, drinking and talking.
As I do.
Yeah, and when you have a knowledge of Portland history and its current trajectories that are fresh to me, because I don't meet that many people who have actually lived here for more than prior to 2005, let alone into the 80s. So I guess I'm curious to hear a little bit about your take on – and thank you, dear listeners. Yes, Brock, I'll have some red wine.
There you go.
Red wine. UB40 right here.
Should I open the other one? Are we
– I probably have a little.
Yeah, all right, there we go.
Sure. Yeah, what's your take on like, so you grew up in northeast for the most part, right?
Yeah, well, north and northeast, yeah.
North and northeast, and now you're in the other Portland.
Yeah, right.
And you've got a good knowledge of the city. What do you think is something encouraging you've seen? Especially, I mean, Portland has changed so much since 2000.
Yeah,
right. Sure. What's something encouraging about that, and what's something that that you'd like to see preserved, and what's something that is fucking annoying that you think we can steer away from? How's that for a weird question?
Well, if you base it from 2000, I have a hard time answering the question.
Re-ask the question and then answer.
to move it on to my own terms. Growing up in Portland, we had, and this actually may be mildly interesting to someone not from Portland. We had a model that was, how would I put it? I heard Portland referred to as the Pittsburgh of the West.
Hmm.
We were a fairly industrial city that was sort of rotting from the inside, and we were on a Detroit-type trajectory where through the 60s and 70s, there were dynamitings going on. One of the best stories I can tell someone who's not been here very long is that when I was a kid, I used to go down to the Pearl District with my father early in the morning on the weekends and look at properties that clients of his company were looking at developing to help him put together bids. And it looked, he called it the demilitarized zone. And it literally looked, between the arsons, between the city-mandated demolitions and just the urban decay, it looked like a war had happened.
That's intense.
It really – I remember brick facades with pieces falling off of them, fully vacant lots with homeless people, you know, the whole oil can.
Occupy Pearl District. Mm-hmm. Well, right. And for those outside of Portland, the Pearl District is a internationally renowned exhibit – and amusement park of urban renewal, of basically taking an abandoned Detroit-esque warehouse district and turning into all kinds of really cool shit, including like the headquarters of Wieden and Kennedy, the ad company that created that Clint Eastwood Super Bowl ad.
Yeah, in Star Trek terms, it's like RISA.
I mean, the premise was you had this section that was adjacent to downtown, which itself was not in very good shape, but had undergone some revitalization. And
they had the Max.
By the mid-80s with the Max coming in. And then I think it was 79, they did the bus mall. Yeah. They kind of had this idea that we were going to revitalize downtown. And part of the problem was that across Burnside was this hole, this pit. And starting in about 86, they started fixing up old buildings. And where there were vacant lots or irrecoverable structures, they put up these units. And the premise was to do a modern version of what had been going on in Portland traditionally, which is mixed use buildings. That you would have shops and things on the first floor. Mm. The second floor, you could have anything from an artist loft to offices. And then beyond that, you'd have housing, and you'd build up anywhere between 5 and 10 floors, maybe more. And the Pearl District is quite a nice place. One thing that was never thought of when they did it, and I can tell you from having lived with my father as one of the contractors on many of those buildings, particularly the early buildings, they never put into concept the model of cost and what these things should cost or have to cost. And it's clear, and it's definitely an evidence if you look at the buildings, that the government was thinking about it in the 90s. They were saying, how do we control this? And so they mandated affordable housing units. And so on Jamison Square, there's a big affordable housing building
right
there. And that was city mandated, built by my dad and his company, Walsh. As it progressed, I think it might have become something else. But going back to, if you're saying what I don't want to see change, what I think should stay is that going back to my childhood, we had this idea that we are not going to become a suburban community, mm-hmm. and that we need to develop our urban spaces, maximize the potential of our urban spaces through transit, mm-hmm. through development, through flexible zoning laws to allow people to densify their properties. Expanding. People don't always understand why we spend all this money on the big pipe. It gets written down a lot as an environmental concern, but it increases in both capacity and quality, our sewage capacity.
Right, which is a big problem because Portland and the Willamette River are notorious for sewage spilling openly into the river.
Which is unsafe and unappealing. And the idea is,
delicious.
At the very least.
And the idea is that if you have a greater sewage capacity where it doesn't wind up in the dead middle of your city bobbing around.
Right.
And seeing it,
Pittsburgh.
As a child, seeing a turd floating in the Willamette River.
Did you actually see
many times.
A solid,
piece of human excrement after a rainstorm is not something you couldn't see.
Hmm. I've never seen that. I'm not a true Portlander in that sense.
I don't wish it on anyone. It's disturbing.
Dad, is that a turd?
Yes, son. Someday all this will be yours.
It's hard to imagine somebody being a kid, whatever, 10 years old, and seeing, having that, like, I don't know, sort of like you think of like a Detroit or maybe like a New York in the 50s, like, we got to get out of this place.
Right.
Mentality. But that's I think, kind of how things were. And we made a city that was livable, that was dense, and that was modernly urban in a way that certainly competes in America and even exists on maybe arguably like a European scale, and I don't want to see that change.
Right,
there's no reason that should change. Mm-hmm. The challenge is to make it a dream that everyone can have.
Sure, and that's kind of the big imbalance, right? Is because as you've said, Brandon, we have an economy that's kind of propped up on cupcakes and handbags and whatnot. Which really isn't the thing that supports it. Like, we've got industries that make this a financially viable place to live, but we got to make sure that we also look to. Well,
it's a transitional thing towards a more localized artisanship, mm-hmm. and like if we think that's a sustainable giant core of our economy of selling bags with birds on it, that's just not quite the case, and we shouldn't fool ourselves into thinking that's like the bedrock of our magic.
Sure, yeah,
and mojo,
yeah. Yeah, I think
it's neat.
I was kind of ramming you guys. One estimate I've heard is that about 20%, 20 to 25% of our net wealth in our city comes from small boutique, locally owned businesses, and mm-hmm. that's actually a staggering sum compared to most cities.
Yeah, that's a great sum.
But that still, if you think about it, that means that 80% of our money has to come from some other industry.
Right.
That means that when you take like Conway and Freightliner, the big shipping and paper employers in this town, they themselves and a couple of things like Intel account for more of our net wealth in our city than all the things that people think of as Portland.
Right, and that's the thing to kind of keep in mind, I suppose. Like, it's not that we have a very amenable city to walking and bicycling and that sort of thing, but like we afford it by building trucks. So
by building trucks and by moving things in and out. That's mm-hmm. why I bring up Conway, is that Conway is a paper company who does not make paper. They ship paper and they move paper around. They're a major employer.
It's pretty interesting.
Yeah. And we have been traditionally what made Portland a city, what brought Portland out of, a camp in the old West status, is that we are a major, major hub of multiple kinds of transit. Mm-hmm. We are a train terminus for freight and passengers. We are a shipping hub. We are the furthest inland you can get ocean-going vessels in this region. And then that makes us a terminus for river barges coming down both the Columbia and the Willamette.
Right, a lot of grain and things coming up and down the river.
Yeah, and that's... so having, whether you're talking about guys on bikes or trucking, it is this sort of moving things and people from place to place is the soul of our city, and it historically has been.
Maybe that's why the first podcast to focus on bicycles and transit with alarming focus, it was us here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We like talking about getting around.
That is the dead middle of Portland culture and history. And
well, back to our earliest roots, it was the fur traders and the lumberjacks and a couple other industries. They were basically extraction economies, and so we made tons of money through, like, when you come back into town from the hinterlands, mm-hmm. you need to get new clothes, you want to get laid, and you want to get drunk. And so brothels, bars, and clothing cleaners were basically the bedrock of our beyond. Like they were the original boutique economies.
Are you hungry, houses. Horny, or naked? Portland can help.
Or do you need a bath?
Yeah. Or do you smell like shit?
Right.
Yeah. It's so funny to say. It's so quaint to think.
I don't want to be proud of that reality, but that's really just kind of that's just where we're from, and it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm proud of that reality.
Doesn't hurt to acknowledge.
I'm not too thrilled of the opium dens or brothels, but the fact that we were able to provide something.
Or being shanghaied, I suppose.
I know what you mean, but those were the industries of transportation cities in that time. And if we had been somehow morally too good to supply a sailor with a hit of opium in 1870.
In LA, yeah.
You know, they would have been happy to go someplace else.
Another place would have become the predominant port, I suppose.
Possibly. I don't know.
What kind of Episcopalians are you in this town? I can't get laid or high.
Yeah. I was going to say that might have made the difference between Portland and Astoria being the big...
I just got back from Astoria.
And Astoria was... there's a lot of factors. We probably can't get all into that now, but yeah.
Sean Astin.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay.
Hey, you guys.
Okay.
So, yeah.
I absolutely love Astoria. I just want to, for anybody who might be listening to this, I guess you guys have people outside of Portland who listen.
That we do.
I would really just, if you come to Oregon and you're enjoying it and you think it's cool, make the trek to Astoria.
Mm-hmm.
Go out there.
Tell anybody else about it.
It's the oldest city on the West Coast, the oldest permanent settlement on the West
Coast. On the actual coast.
Mm-hmm.
West of the Rockies.
Yeah, well that would be the coast.
I mean, whatever.
As opposed to North Dakota.
Yeah.
Not actually.
Really, that's where the first gringos
just
celebrated
their bicentennial. Yeah. And I'm not even talking about Lewis and Clark, because they judge it in Astoria by permanent settlement. So in 1811, the richest man in the world, John Jacob Astor, conspired with his buddy Thomas Jefferson to start, and I'm serious about this, and I can prove it with a letter that is available on Wikipedia if anyone wants to question me, wanted to start, now check this out, start a new republic on the West Coast.
Jefferson wanted to have, he believed the entire continent should be three distinct republics.
Mm. Would the Louisiana Purchase be the middle of that sandwich?
Well, more or less.
Okay.
He said there's no way in hell you could have a republic of any sanity that can cover the entire continent.
Boy, we showed him.
Hell yeah, we did.
Well, except for the sanity
and we're
part.
Failing.
Yeah.
We're failing.
But and to that end, a lot of people know that. I was taught that in school. What I didn't realize is that that'd be the equivalent of Obama said, we're going to start a republic, wherever, it doesn't matter, on the moon, someplace that's not currently anybody's land.
Sure.
Gingrich would love that.
By definition. Yeah, right. And Bill Gates or Steve Jobs or Warren Buffett, or all three of them got together.
If all three of them got together, we would go to the moon.
I will put my money on that. And that's what John Jacob Astor, who was by far the wealthiest man in the world, did. And he's founded Astoria.
Hmm.
And that was
in 1811.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we
did have a world fair in a sense.
It just happened
before the World's Fair was a convention.
He was our Zuckerberg.
I describe
we were his Huckleberry.
I describe Astoria as Portland's white trash goth little sister.
Oh, there you go.
That's like Gateway.
No, because it's just trash. It's not goth. Okay. It's, you got to get the old house, like the weird old Goonies houses. And
right.
You know, the graveyard of the Pacific, right? Yeah, so the Columbia River Bar is home to over 2,000 shipwrecks.
Mm.
So 200 years, people have been taking ships up that river. 2,000
because the river gets to a couple miles, several miles wide, right?
Well, yeah, it's several miles wide, but the channel's, I don't know what, the channel's skinny. But basically what it is, you've got the Columbia River, so you've got all this water coming in from all the entire watershed, and then you've got the Pacific Ocean. And they run into each other, and they just jump six feet up in the air. And you have this tumult that literally, when you approach it on a boat, it looks like a hill made out of water. And because of the way that the tides
and the fact that the Columbia can contend that well with the ocean is pretty cool.
It fights the ocean pretty hard on a daily basis. And
roll
because
on,
of
Columbia,
the,
roll on.
Hey, written here in Lentz.
By Woody That's Guthrie.
Just like down the block, actually.
Like as in 12 blocks. Yeah. Right.
His apartment when he lived here and was working for the power administration was in fact, right there on the corner.
Can you tell how quickly we are to be proud of something in Lentz?
Lentz needs something to be proud of. That right there is like, I mean, you're talking about you're on a city perch. You're in the oldest city on the West Coast. Perched on the watery grave of
with a hill of water next to it.
A hill of water. I mean, it's a ship terminator. To this day, I mean, I'm not even kidding you. As late as 2006, mm-hmm. Container vessels can be pulled under by that thing. So you can imagine a boat big enough to haul those containers.
Right.
Hits that wall of water. If they don't do it right, it flips it over on its side and drops it to the bottom.
And you got
to
be very
seriously.
Careful.
2006, that happened.
I just was in Astoria, and unless I'm mistaken, they have a plaque there commemorating the known deaths. Out there, wow. And the last ones, I believe, were 2006. I mean, it can turn boats, fishing vessels, and container vessels.
Barges full of iPads upside down.
Well, I was going to say, did they find anything like floating after that? Did any of the containers break open?
Sean Astin.
Sure.
Some very, very soggy Samsungs.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I remember there was something on public radio recently about some container ship that dropped off a whole bunch of rubber duckies. And they just like floated around the Pacific Rim.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that wasn't there, but yeah. I know about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, they had a container vessel in the last couple of years was going over that thing, and it didn't sink, but it tipped and lost a bunch of stuff. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of concern because you can imagine it works like this. The bar moves back and forth with uh-huh. the tide and with the current of the river.
It's never quite static.
Not at all. By no means.
It's made of sand.
And well, it's actually not a sandbar; it's a water bar.
Okay. We're talking about the big water hump.
Yeah, the hump in the water. Yeah. Okay. And so that thing moves around, and so some ship lost containers full of I don't know what. It was valuable, and the Coast Guard was very concerned about people trying to go and get the go and salvage these. But the problem is, you know, you can imagine, you know, like you got a boat in the river, right?
Right.
And then they're going to send a guy down to
the most dangerous part
to go mm-hmm. and open up these containers. Get out whatever's valuable and bring it to the surface. Meanwhile, that bar at any minute can come back.
It's like the nautical equivalent of the Santa Cruz Mystery Spot or the Oregon Vortex.
Yeah, the graveyard of the Pacific. So.
Something else.
If you ever want to die, it's a great place to take your motorboat.
Well, good to know. Well, file that away for later. And on terms of a story, not really. Don't worry. I'm fine.
Don't tell your children.
Let's tell the good people of Minnesota more about Astoria. Lots of Finnish people, just like Minnesota.
It's true.
Right. A lot of Lutherans.
The only thing we don't have is Garrison Keillor, but we could probably convince him to move.
Yeah.
Oh, he'd have way better stories.
Well, he's Swedish, but I think it's Swedish. I always picture like the Astorian Garrison Keillor would be just like NPR Garrison Keillor without all the mirth. Uh-huh. Just be like, I'm done. He died. Everyone in town was sad. This has been the news from Astoria.
Nietzsche does NPR. Jeez.
Yeah, the problem with Garrison Keillor, aside from the overpronounced,
are you allowed in a podcast to talk shit about Garrison Keillor?
My only complaint is that his most recent edition of the news from Lake Wobegon focused solely on bodily function humor.
Yeah.
It's a big problem.
That's what it sounded like, too. So,
now you're bringing it onto our show. Stop, you bad person. Well, anyways, I was just going to say, from Astoria, I believe the operator, the proprietor and manager of TriMet Diaries lives out, Dave, and also if Dave knows Portland,
yeah,
I believe,
yeah,
lives out in Astoria, along with Heather?
He writes why?
Of Mile 73. He loves Portland.
Okay, so he lives in Astoria, but he comes here to write about our bus system?
He writes about TriMet from Astoria.
They've only been out there for a year or two. I think.
Yeah, I think it's a recent transplant.
Unfortunately, I think the bane of poor Astoria is existence is that it's a town that was based on cannery and cannery business. That's all gone.
True enough.
Now they have beautiful, cheap real estate, mm-hmm. and Portlanders are moving in by the boatload just to have a
so
place
to
with just to have a place with affordable rent that has kind of that still retains that Northwest vibe.
And sure.
Old houses, vintage homes.
Yeah.
Things like that. So.
And you're only 3 transit connections from Portland?
There's got to be a lot.
So I was telling you about we took Amtrak. Buses.
To Longview? And then
we went to Cannon and then up Seaside, Gearhart.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then around. There is another way. It exists. I was mistaken in saying that way didn't exist anymore.
Uh-huh.
They have the bus. It will take you
to the bus.
It's called the bus, or also known as the Lewis and Clark bus.
Mm-hmm. It's lazy.
Yeah. But it will take
it's
you.
The new bus.
It begins in Warrenton. Its terminus is in Napa.
That's right. They transfer to Columbia County Rider, which takes you to what, St. Helens?
CC Rider can take you to wherever the end of TriMet is.
Oh, right. That's our signal to start moving off from transit tables. But no, that's the thing. Like, you can make the connection. You can take public transit if you have the time. It's a bit more expensive than local transit. It's like $5, I think, to cop the Columbia County Rider out of Portland.
Don't compare it to local. Consider the fact that you're moving from one significant part of the buyer
region. The cheapest way to get there is outside of that would be Amtrak, which there and back was $72.
Which is pretty expensive.
Yeah. I mean, it's not terrible.
It's a couple gas tanks.
But, mm-hmm. yeah, exactly. Or to drive your car. And
that's the plumb line of all of this.
I know. So, but if we had known that the bus, what they call the bus, or the
right.
Lewis and Clark bus.
It's Astoria's local transit system.
It would have cost us more money between that and the CC Rider. It would have been probably under $20 each way.
Right. If you have the time, it's a great way to do it.
Well, and it's not bad because... the thing is, with the bus, with the county rider, you buy a day pass.
Oh, is that right?
So you could do things like one of the things that nobody does and that is super fun. And like, if you just want to have some, like a weird time in a small town, get off in Columbia City. Nobody ever sees Columbia City.
So Columbia City. And were we talking about that last time?
I think we were. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Scappoose and St. Helens sit on 30. And if you get off, there's this little secret town in this bay on the Columbia River that has local shops and like a really beautiful church and an old city hall. And it's super charming, like Main Street shit. And go in there, they got a little vintage store and mm-hmm. they got some coffee shops and they got a movie theater. And especially if the weather's nice, it's just a great place to spend some time.
Right. And if you're a Portland Afoot subscriber and you remember the feature from Portland Afoot about your favorite destination on transit, this could be one of them. Columbia City, Columbia County Rider.
Yep.
Head up there, have lunch, come back. It's pretty fantastic.
And I don't know about the bus, the Lewis and Clark bus, the one that takes you to Astoria, Warrenton, but the CC Rider will let you take your bike.
Yeah, I believe the bus does too.
I think it does, but I
believe that's correct. Yeah. The thing about the coastal communities and their transit systems is that they're very amenable to bicycles. They make a lot of concessions for you.
Yeah, well there's the Coast Empire or whatever it is, the 101 bus that takes you to Seaside Cannon, all those different stops, and that has a bike rack.
Right. Yeah, and the Wave in Tillamook County, which also connects to Portland, you can actually tell them that you're bringing your bicycle and they'll make space for you. So
is it really that bad?
I think it's interesting. I'm being mindful of the margins.
Well, we are all we're
of our friends in Boston and Fort Collins,
indeed.
Olympia.
Well, just consider this us filling you in, good friends outside of Portland, on how if you visit Portland, you can get around by public transit and bicycle.
Well, and odds are, wherever you're at, you can look hard enough and find a combination of municipal. Interregional transit options that can get you way further than you ever thought you could based on your own particular city's transit options. It's fucking incredible.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and the fact that you guys are geeking out about this in one part of the country, like, it's all over. So look it up.
Yeah.
It's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Look it up and make phone calls because Google, I regret that I did not find out about the bus because what I did is I looked up transit options via Google and I guess it didn't come up high enough in the search engine.
You should have looked up adventuresoffthegrid.google sites.
I was about to mention that. That's a site that I compiled back in the day, kind of kind of a compendium of all the connecting transit agencies that mm-hmm. connect with Portland. And I haven't scanned it yet, but I made a hand-drawn pencil graphic of all the lines. All the
pencil graphic.
I drew something on a piece of paper connecting all of the transit agencies. And it's been a couple of years, so things may have changed. Yeah. As always, disclaimer, call, use the phone, and talk to the transit agency itself to make sure you can make the connections. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and I haven't updated that site in a couple of years, but the framework, most of the stuff is probably still valid.
For anyone who's interested in this particular corridor of travel in the Northwest, sunsettransit.org.
Yeah, that's nice.
SunsetEmpireTransit.org mm-hmm. Has all this information about the Coastliner.
So awesome.
And the bus, the Lewis and Clark bus, and then the Columbia County. Mm-hmm. They have all that stuff.
It's good to know.
I didn't know about it until I went out there. Next time I go, I'm not to diss the Amtrak. They went on time, and it was a great bus.
That's right. And their contractor, I believe, is Northwest Point. Is that right?
I have no idea.
I think they have Wi-Fi on the bus.
They absolutely do.
Well, that's magic.
And they'll accept a bicycle underneath in their little storage bins. So.
Yeah, well, I would believe that, especially because we brought a thing in both times, there and back. We were the only people with a thing under there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So there's plenty of space.
Yeah, and they were on time, and it was a comfortable bus, and no complaints. Mm-hmm. But you could have saved money and had some fun like going out there, you know.
That's right, transferring in Columbia City.
Yeah. So yeah, going to Columbia City and just walk around Columbia City. Yeah. You know, have your lunch in Columbia City. It's a great little town.
Yeah. Well, we're almost 15 minutes past what we usually stop at. And I mean,
this is a lively episode.
This is a podcast, so you can do whatever the hell you want, I suppose. But is there anything else that you'd like to throw in right before we wrap it up?
Ooh.
It's okay if not.
Who should we not vote for?
Well,
oh, sorry.
Right, how about this?
Rick Santorum.
I will not get into any political candidates. If you're listening to this and you're a Portlander, and if you're not from Portland, I have nothing to say about where you're from, and I apologize for it. But if you're from Portland, consider this. I think that the value of our city has been heretofore. That we created a style of life that was different from what 20th century notions of urban living were. Mm-hmm. And we did it all right. We did everything right. We only left one thing out of the equation, which was value. And value is so important, but we didn't consider that all the way. And the value, the price premium on a urban lifestyle in a place like Portland was not accounted for. And going forward, we're fine. We're going to be okay. All we need to do is figure out how to make that premium for that lifestyle low enough that the general populace who has spent their time, whether it's their entire lives or just the last few years, financing these things. Because mm-hmm. much of
the
this is
interested but concerned.
Well, yeah. I mean, regardless of where you stand on that spectrum, if you pay taxes to local taxes, you finance the South Waterfront, you finance the Pearl District, you finance the Max and the streetcar and
Rose Quarter.
Yeah, all this stuff has come from, at least in part, most of the development. We're not a city that develops on its own. Like, I guess Dallas kind of does that. And so we have a say. We have ownership that maybe a more, I don't know what you'd say, libertarian, free market type of city like they have in Texas or Arizona has, you know, where they would just allow developers to come in and do what they want. And they're developers, so they can do whatever they want.
Right.
Here, our money goes to it. And mm-hmm. our style of life and what you think of when you think of life in Portland comes from your taxes. And from your votes and from everything else. And we have to think, going forward, think, okay, we've done densification. We've done urbanization. We've thought in new and inventive ways by 20th century standards of transit. We have to think about how to make this work effectively for every single person. And if you hear a candidate or anybody saying that, you know, the model we have needs to be further expanded along the lines that it has been, insofar as to say we're going to garden downtown, we're going to make the model of the Pearl District as seen out, carried out upon the South Waterfront and further,
right,
expanded right. greater. What you're talking about is not just the poor, because actually, and I hate to sound like Mitt Romney, because of our very functional laws, housing laws, the very poor are probably secure here for the near term. Not to say we shouldn't be concerned with them. It's the lower middle class and the middle class that that face evacuation via housing cost.
Right.
And anybody who says that the model we've used heretofore needs to be carried further, and whether that's talking about the Pearl District or whether that's talking about green and sustainable, things we've done so far or anything, the model needs to change to incorporate the notion that we have to, not via subsidies, but via market solutions.
that is fairly Romney, but
well, but it is.
I'm not disagreeing with you.
The government can't just subsidize every lower middle class person in Portland. We can't afford it. We don't have that money. We have to, when we spend our government money, be creating markets for the money that employed people have to spend on rent, spend on their mortgages, spend on their property taxes. And the benefit we'll get from that, if we find a governmental system that jibes with that mentality, is that from having a functional work base and people to go to work and have jobs and do things that create wealth, that money stays in our economy. Right now we have a lot of people in Portland who are the wealthiest 1%, 10% of Portland, who bring their money in from outside, spend some of it here, and then because of the way investment economies work, they send it out. We don't have there's no financial services district in downtown Portland, meaning that if I am a person who is wealthy and as wealthy people do have 40 to 50% of my money divested in, or invested in fluid investment, none of that money, never mind the actual capital of that money, but the fees accrued, the guy who handles the investment, he's probably not in Portland. And that goes only further into the internet age. And so encouraging a localized economy, a working class manufactured based economy, saying, okay, we've got South Waterfront, we've got the towers and we've got the condos. Let's make sure that everybody else who clocks
in, if we have a fake blue collar class, we can keep the shit going in some groovy ways.
Yeah. And we don't make the fundamental American error of thinking that those things are opposed.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Totally agree. Totally agree. Green and blue are not necessarily two different as far apart on the spectrum as we think they are.
They're even related. There is some blue in green.
There can be. There's a shit ton of blue
along
and
with
green.
Yellow. What does that say? So that's my rant. That's my beef. That's my thing. I can call it.
I dig it, man. I dig it.
Well, we got to say thank you so much, Vincent, for being here. We appreciate your time.
I'm sorry
time
for dragging out your podcast.
No,
hey,
it was
man,
groovy.
I'm sure everybody that's made it this far is really excited about it. So, yeah.
Well, thanks for having me.
You can write to us at thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. You can Twitter to us at sprocketpodcast. Our phone number for SMS and voicemail messages is 503-847-9774. Visit us on the web at thesprocketpodcast.com, which is still directing to Podbean, which was down for like 36 hours or 48 hours this weekend or something. So we apologize for that, even though it wasn't
our
fault.
Don't miss the jump.
Ryan J. Lane gave us our theme music, and we also have local Portland man Hurt Bird. We'll see you next time. Take care.